Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Episode 237 for the Love of the Game on the Believe Podcast Network is brought to you by Bet Online. NFL playoffs are right around the corner. NBA season is in full swing. NHL season is in full swing. And Bet Online has you covered with all the up-to-the-second odds, news, and scores. With additional odds, lines, trends, and info on both desktop and mobile, you can access the world's best wagering information anytime. So go to the website today. Use promo code BLEAVE, that's B-L-E-A-V, to get a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Bet Online, where the game starts. With that said, episode 237 for the Love of the Game. Let's get this work.
Big Terrible, Texas, where legends are born. Look, Kiki the Don, original screwed up click. This dedicated to DJ Screw, Fat Pat, Big Mellow, Big Steve, Bun.
Well, it's Big Bun Beater, baby, Mr. Wood Grain. With diamonds up against them, ballin' through your hood, man. And I'm smoking on some good, man. The color purple, not the movie, but the kind that have you going in a circle. Chrome looking more glassed in the trench coat tower. My car dripping candy paint like it just came out the
welcome
shower.
Welcome back, everybody. Happy 2024. It is yours truly. It's ATH back in the saddle, back behind the mic, episode 237 for the Love of the Game. And it was quite a weekend in sports. We had a lot going on football wise. We had two really entertaining college football games. We'll get to those in a second. Michigan advances, Washington advances. They'll be playing in the college football playoff on Monday, January 8th. Hopefully we're going to get on a recurring guest to gloat about his Michigan Wolverines. We'll get to him in a little bit, hopefully. But we're first going to start with the NFL. And obviously, yes, I will get to the Knicks making a trade for OG Anunoby later on in this monologue. And we may have another guest to talk about that another segment. But let's start with the NFL. So first game of the weekend was arguably the most entertaining game of the weekend. Cowboys, Lions. Cowboys beat the Lions 20-19 in Dallas. I was on the Lions plus 6.5. It was the only pick I won this weekend. It was a disaster weekend for picks against the spread for yours truly. 1-4, not very good. But okay, so let's set the scene here. Mike McCarthy and Dallas Cowboys are trying to run out the clock with like a minute left or so. McCarthy calls for like three pass plays, basically saves the Detroit Lions 45 seconds or so. They don't convert, they punt. Jared Goff leads the Lions down the field, touchdown, Amon-Ra St. Brown, 20-19. The Lions have already won the division. They may have been alive, barely alive, to get the one seed. Dan Campbell decided before the game, if they were ever in this situation, they were going to go for two. Fine. They go for two. They have the crazy trick play. Throw to an eligible lineman. Two-point conversion. Successful. Flag is thrown. Illegal procedure. Right? Illegal touch. The lineman didn't report as eligible, which in fact he did. It was a bad call. The Lions got screwed. Move it back. Lions still go for it at the 7. A lot of people were killing Dan Campbell for that. I kind of respected it. They get the illegal contact. move it up to the 3.5-yard line. 2-point try is not successful. The Lions clearly got jobbed by the referees. All said and done, they should have won the game, but 2019 Cowboys. I was very impressed by the Lions in this game, especially with their defense. I mean, they were one should have been safety away from winning this game. Take what happened the last 2-point conversion out of it. Dak Prescott's long touchdown pass to CeeDee Lamb, where he escaped pressure. I mean, the Lions had him lined up for a safety. If that play doesn't happen and they actually get the tackle, the Lions win this game, and we don't even have drama at the end of the game. So I was very impressed by the Lions. Dan Campbell, well, he's consistent. He's always pushing the envelope. He's always going for it. He's doing fake punts. He's doing stuff. I was very impressed with the Lions, but that was the most entertaining game of the weekend. Other things that happened this weekend, I mean, the Giants lost 26-25 to the Rams. The Rams offense continues to look good. Their special team, but the Rams may be a dangerous wild card team in the NFC. As for the Giants, it was Tyrod Taylor back at quarterback. It looked competent. They were taking deep shots. The Giants have some playmakers on defense. Banks at corner is really good. Dexter Lawrence is really good. Kayvon Thibodeau is really good. They may have found something in Isaiah Simmons as like a flyer that they got for a 7th-round pick. Like, they have some things going on defense. Offensively, they need some work. They need some work. I mean, Wandale Robinson looked all right. And I mean, when Tyrod Taylor's in the game, they're taking deep shots. I don't know why they couldn't do that with Daniel Jones, but whatever. Giants offense is a mess. But the best part of this game for the Giants is basically we've seen that Brian Daboll has not lost locker room, and it's not another revolving door every 2 years of another coach. And there were questions about it in the middle of the year. I had questions about it when they only had 2 wins, but the Giants are still playing for Brian Daboll. He hasn't lost the locker room. That's encouraging. We'll see what they do in the draft. We'll see what they do at quarterback in the draft, whatever. Other things from the NFL this weekend. Most impressive performance was the Ravens. I mean, an absolute beatdown of the Miami Dolphins, 56-19, just an absolute clinic on both sides of the ball. Lamar Jackson, who I've been critical of over the years, was sensational. 5 touchdown passes, perfect passer rating. And this is a disaster game for the Dolphins because not only do they get killed, but Bradley Chubb, torn ACL, is done for a while. He joins Jalen Phillips as being the other edge rusher for the Dolphins, starting edge rusher, out for the year because he has an Achilles injury. I mean, the Dolphins were without Jalen Waddle, without Raheem Mostert. Those guys will be back for the playoffs, but it's just the Dolphins are really beat up. And we'll see what happens with them this coming weekend. I mean, they're set up with the game against the Bills, week 18, where basically the Dolphins have already clinched a playoff spot, but if they lose to the Bills become the number 2 seed. And depending on what else happens, if the Bills lose this game, which they shouldn't, if the Bills are any good, they shouldn't. And they looked a little lackluster in their 27-21 win against the Patriots in week 17. But if the Bills lose, they could be out. So the Bills could either be the number 2 seed or they could be out completely. Just a ridiculous scenario. The NFL was interesting this weekend, which brings me to my next rant about NFL red zone in general. The Sunday NFL red zone slates, the 1 p.m. slate was terribly uninteresting, all right? Terribly uninteresting. There were so many crappy games that really were meaningless. It was a terrible product. And the 4 p.m. was even worse. First of all, there were only like 3 games, and they were all snooze fests. NFL red zone was great to start, but it's not it anymore, all right? It's just a bad product. There are too many times where it focuses on games that are completely meaningless. It highlights meaningless football and a lot of bad football. I've ranted on the NFL and its level of play all season. But give me a compelling matchup and watching a full game like Lions and Cowboys Saturday night. I actually enjoyed sitting down to watch that game over NFL Red Zone. People who are Red Zone fanatics, Like, get lost, okay? And also, for all the over-the-top fantasy guys, and a bunch of my friends are like this, basically live tweeting, essentially live tweeting NFL Red Zone, what's happening. No one cares about your fantasy team, right? No one cares. So the group chat, constantly messaging about who was projected where, and no one cares, all right? No one cares. Over-the-top fantasy guy is the worst. I get it. It was fantasy finals. I get that. If you were involved, great. I was not, whatever. But like, the constant play-by-play on Red Zone, if you're over-the-top fantasy guy, get out of my face, all right? Red Zone was a terrible product on Sunday. Absolutely terrible. They need to figure some things out. Need to figure some things out. And yes, I would much rather watch a full game, a compelling matchup, than watch NFL Red Zone. Okay, so now that we got the football out of the way, here's what I really wanted to talk about. The Knicks made a trade. The Knicks traded Emmanuel Quickley, RJ Barrett, and the Detroit second round pick that they got in a trade, which essentially will be like the 31st pick, for OG Anunoby. A couple of thoughts, because with the Knicks, it's not just at the surface, but let's start at the surface. As a basketball trade, this is a good trade. OG Anunoby fits what the Knicks are looking to do from that spot way more than RJ Barrett does. You saw it in the game on Sunday against the Minnesota Timberwolves. He fits seamlessly. Whenever he has a wide open corner three, I have faith that it's going to go in because he shoots over 40% from there. RJ Barrett, I never thought those shots were going to go in. He's a tremendous defender, whether it's on the ball or in help situations. And he's versatile because he can guard one through four, basically. I mean, the numbers of him being the primary defender over his career against Anthony Edwards are amazing, where he's basically shut Anthony Edwards down a tremendous amount of time, which is very impressive considering Anthony Edwards was one of the 10 best players in the league and arguably the best shooting guard in the league. And he did have a big game yesterday against the Knicks. But if you saw the matchup, you know, the isolation matchups with OG Anunoby, Anunoby was very good in that matchup. So, yes, the trade on the surface as a basketball trade is a good trade. Are the Knicks going to miss Emmanuel Quickley and his spark plug offense? Yes. I do believe they're going to miss him. You even saw it yesterday because Jalen Brunson did not have a good shooting game. And when he's not having a good shooting game right now, the Knicks basically have to ride Brunson and basically have him and Randle do a lot of the heavy lifting in terms of creating. And I'll get to Julius Randle in a second because I'm not really sure we want him doing more with the basketball than he's already doing. He was excellent down the stretch of that game. More on Randle in just a second. But if Brunson doesn't have it shooting, you know, the Knicks may struggle to score, especially in the second unit. As much of a Deuce McBride guy as I am, he just doesn't have that zest. Like, Quickley had a zest to him. And, you know, he was a tremendous offensive player, great shooter. And when he was on the floor with Brunson, when they played together, the numbers were staggering. Like, the Knicks were very good. Those lineups were very good. They're going to miss Emmanuel Quickley. The hope is, and my belief is that as somebody who's part of the Quentin Grimes hive, he's going to get a major bump from this. You saw it yesterday in spurts. When he actually touches the ball, he's able to do things, not just catch and shoot, but he's able to attack a closeout. He's able to find guys. I think they can recreate Emmanuel Quickley's offense in the aggregate. I think that there are going to be guys available closer to the trade deadline that may be helpful in terms of spark plugs off the bench for offense. And it was basically a contract issue with Emmanuel Quickley. I didn't think they wanted to pay him what he was worth. I think ever since they signed Jalen Brunson, I said this when they signed Jalen Brunson, like, Emmanuel Quickley was never going to be seen as somebody who could potentially be a long-term fit for point guard for the New York Knicks, which is a little unfortunate because I think he's going to be very, very good for Toronto. But the best part about this trade is the RJ Barrett experience is over. and good riddance, because I could not stand watching the guy anymore. Barrett is the kind of guy who needs to be massaging the ball himself. He does a lot of the same things that Julius Randle does, except he's not nearly as good at it as Julius Randle. Like, RJ Barrett is a mediocre basketball player. He does not do anything above average. Now, we'll see what happens with him in Toronto. He's back home in his native Canada. Scotty Barnes is a little bit of a different fit playing with him than Julius Randle, as I just mentioned. And Barrett had a solid game in his first game in Toronto, but he's just mediocre. And the Knicks, because of where they drafted him and his pedigree as being number three overall pick, the top high school player his senior year, they were force-feeding him possessions, force-feeding him usage, and he wasn't worthy of it. And it just wasn't working anymore. So the Knicks had to pay a tax to get rid of RJ Barrett, especially after they re-signed him to an extension that I hated at the time, because for a bunch of different reports said that that was the reason why they didn't get Donovan Mitchell. We litigated that already. But it's just quickly was kind of the tax to get off of RJ Barrett to get OG Anunoby in the door. OG Anunoby is a good player. So on the surface, it makes the Knicks better this year. It made them more watchable. My issue with it is a couple of things. One, people are talking about OG Anunoby as if he's like the second coming of LeBron James. He's in year seven. He averages about 16, 17 points a game, 5 rebounds, 4 assists. He's a very nice player. He's a good player. He's somewhere between good and very good. Like, he's in the middle of that. This move being celebrated that he's anything more than that is crazy, okay? It's crazy. This is not what we have been told as Knicks fans as the big move. And anybody who says it is kidding themselves. And if the Knicks brass is telling us through the media, and not Leon Rose directly, because he never speaks to the media, but if Knicks beat writers like Ian Begley, those types are saying that this sets them up for the next big move. Well, we've been hearing that shit for 4 years now, and it's never happened. It's never happened. Now, again, a lot of that is not the Knicks' fault. A lot of that is the landscape of the league has changed from out from under them. Like, for example, Giannis resigned after he was maybe going to test not resigning. They get Damian Lillard. The Bucks are really good. Joel Embiid was maybe the next disgruntled superstar, but the 76ers are really good considering James Harden's not there. He's not necessarily looking to jettison out of Philadelphia. So a lot of this isn't the Knicks' fault. But I just don't want to hear the fact that they're making these big moves, that they're ready to make these big moves. Eventually, they're going to have to go all in on somebody because the assets that they have are going to depreciate. Like, you could have gotten Donovan Mitchell for a package around RJ Barrett and Emmanuel quickly, and you would have had to throw in some picks last year. Like, the asset management is a problem. And the other problem with the New York Knicks right now, and I know I sound like sour grapes considering the Knicks for the better part of my life after the year 2000 have sucked and have been incompetent while sucking. But the Knicks are run like a synagogue or like the mafia. Certain people have status and certain people don't. And if you are rep by CAA and OG Anunoby is rep by Leon Rose's son at CAA, you have status. If you went to Villanova, you have status. If you went to Kentucky because of World Wide West, you generally have status, unless you're Emmanuel Quickly, right? Because Brunson has ultra status and Quickly did not. It's just there's a nepotism and favoritism, and I'm not sure that the Knicks are really interested in being really good. They're interested in being good. And again, they're good. But I'm not sure they're interested in being really good as opposed to getting their guys paid. Salute me familia, that kind of stuff. So we'll see. And they're going to have to pay OG Anunoby this summer. And his contract for a guy who's somewhere between good and very good is going to annoy me. And part of that is because this summer's free agent class is not very good, right? And you have good teams with cap space, like the Philadelphia 76ers, who are constantly looking to upgrade their roster alongside Maxey and Embiid and become real, real major finals contenders if they aren't already so. So there's going to be a little bit of a bidding war for OG. And he's going to get a number that's going to annoy me. But ultimately, what annoys me most about this is that, and I've harped on this before, and I know he's been awesome after his first 10 games, is that the Knicks, this move basically signified that they are very committed to Julius Randle being the centerpiece. And I know down the stretch of last night's game, he was fantastic, made a bunch of really big shots. And I know after his first 10 games, he's been largely awesome, but the numbers are just hollow. It's not going to result in anything more than a second round appearance. And if that's the business you want to be in, okay, you'll sell playoff tickets. You'll get fake optimism, but the Knicks will never go anywhere with Randle on the roster. And this trade signifies to me that they are very content where they are. And that's not good enough. It's not good enough. So we'll see what happens. So yes, at the surface, I like the trade. Anunoby is a really good fit and it helps them defensively. And we know Tibbs, it was probably killing him that they weren't as good defensively in the month of December as they had been to start the year. Anunoby fixes that. You get rid of RJ Barrett, who was basically like a stale fart over the Knicks organization. And I know I'm hard on Barrett, but I just couldn't stand hearing all the Knicks homers in my life or on Twitter, mostly my personal friends, who were telling me that RJ Barrett was star J Barrett. He was never a star. Okay. He was never, ever a star. His upside is Chris Middleton, and I'm not even sure he's going to get there. So yes, the trade is a good trade at the surface. They will miss Emmanuel quickly. I just am dubious of this Knicks front office coach combo and that they're indebted to Julius Randle and think that they can be elevated to anything more than a second round playoff team with Julius Randle being a major part of it. Anyway, so that's my rant on the Knicks. We're going to get to a recurring guest to talk a little bit about college football, huge Michigan win, and hopefully we'll get to a second guest to talk a little bit more about the Knicks trade, and some other things. We'll get to them in just a matter of moments. I wasn't sure what kind of guests I were going to have this week. The sports landscape is always changing, but I did have an idea that this person is going to come on again, a recurring guest, Mr. Michigan man himself. Jordan Marks is back. That was a big win this past weekend. Just describe to me the feeling right now.
Yeah, I mean, it's an unbelievable feeling. I mean, it's an unbelievable feeling. I'm still in that, you know, it hasn't even been 24 hours, so I'm still in disbelief because the game itself was absolute madness. But just, we never actually overcome that type of adversity and to actually get it done and come out on top and plan for a national championship after all we went through this whole season and all we've been through. I mean, it's truly incredible that we're one game away from being the national champs. Unbelievable to even say that.
And it's so crazy because, you know, we've been doing this segment on this show for a while now, and the evolution that you've had in the Harbaugh era, where at first you couldn't beat Ohio State. Then you're beating Ohio State, making the college football playoff, but then never getting to the title game. And now here you are a week from yesterday, January 8th, you will be playing for a national title.
It's amazing. I mean, just, I don't know, 3 years ago, people wanted to, you know, fire Harbaugh. I mean, they went as far as to chop his salary in half. And then, yeah, we got over the hump, beating Ohio State, making the college football playoff, not being able to beat Georgia, looking really unprepared for TCU last year, coming into this game against an Alabama team who some people, you know, maybe didn't even think should be in the playoff, but also some people said, you know what, maybe they should be in the playoff. And not only that, they're tougher than Michigan. They just beat Georgia. They're going to beat the crap out of Michigan. And you saw the lines move and money coming in.
Alabama was getting a lot of love going into this game.
And, unbelievable. Unbelievable play. Unbelievable preparation by the coaching staff over the last month. And, let's go finish this job. Let's finish this story.
So let's go through the game for a little bit, right? So it starts out, Michigan gets down a touchdown early. They get the equalizer. They go up 13-7. It looks like the offense is moving. It's 13-10 going into half. Then the offense really peters out. We've got missed field goals. Special teams is a bit of a mess. They go down 17-13. And to me, obviously, the major chain turning point in the game was the fourth down call deep in your own territory with, what was it, like 3.5 minutes left? With all three timeouts, fourth and two, they go for it. They're like, listen, if we're not going to get it here, we may not win the game anyway. So they go for it. They get the conversion, running back out of the flat. Carum catches the pass. They dodge a penalty for the illegal block, but it was a spot foul. So the first down stands. McCarthy takes him down the field. He had not been great in this game for the most part, especially not in the second half. And they have that amazing catch. Who was it? Number one had that incredible catch on the tip ball.
Roman. Not a great throw by JJ, but Roman.
Well, it was deflected. It was deflected. Yeah. I mean, so it goes, high up in the air. The catch radius is crazy. And then here we are. Overtime. Run the ball twice, touchdown. They get the stop in overtime. But take me back to that fourth down conversion.
It's fourth down.
You and your crew, were you guys screaming for them to go for it? Like, where were you guys at?
We don't scream for them to go for it on fourth down anymore. Michigan goes for it on fourth down almost every single time in that scenario. That's just – And you see now a lot, both in college and the NFL, they put the analytics on the screen and they say, go, like the book says, go, go, go. And Harbaugh even more so, and Sharon Moore, the offensive coordinator, they're always going in this thing. But you got to go for it fourth down, even on your own 33 here with 3:19 left to play. Definitely we were saying absolutely got to go. And unfortunately, the block in the back took a lot of the yardage away, but it was first down. We weren't screaming that you gotta go, but at the same time, that Roman Wilson play with that catch was the play of the game for me. I mean, that is to be able to snatch that out of the air after the deflection, like you said. The nickel corner Moore, I think his name was, on Alabama, almost picks that off. I mean, that was a tough catch. From there, Michigan just punches it in the end zone, and then what happens in overtime ensues. But, oh, man.
They scored with a minute 21 left.
Right.
Was there any part of you that was nervous that Alabama was going to come down and get a field goal? Because their kicker had been money, right? He made a 50-yarder in the game. Like, in the kicking game, Alabama had the edge.
Yes. Obviously, I'm always scared, right? Like, Jalen Burrow has done something.
Right, of course, you're always scared, but like a level of scared.
I don't know if their offense is totally well suited to drive down the full football field, do that, especially the way that we've been defending the pass. Especially, they really got it done on the ground between Jason McGlellan and Moreau with his legs, but they didn't really have any explosive passing plays during the course of the game, and they kind of would need to do that. But him scrambling down the field against us wasn't really going to do it. And then when you get the incompletions, then it's 3rd and 10, and Moreau dumps it off to McClellan. I felt like we were in a good position there. But, I mean, the special teams thing, like you said, it really killed us all day. And without the special teams mishaps, and not even just the muff punt or the missed
extra. We'll get to that in a sec.
I mean, I think this game's at least we win by 2 scores without all that crap. So
Milroe's weakness, major weakness, is throwing the ball in intermediate routes, right? The 10, 15-yard routes. Like, he doesn't hit those consistently. And when you're trying to get a field goal in that scenario, I mean, you're not going to get beat over the top. I mean, you'll give up the dink and dunk stuff underneath, but like, he's just not able to hit the, like, a 15-yard in. So I guess you had the right to, you know, feel some sense of calm that you weren't going to get, you know, a 55-yard field goal kicked on you at the end of the game, at the end of regulation, to lose.
Yeah, and that's it. Like I said, I was nervous for sure because whatever. But at the same time, Jalen Moreau, we said it before the game, he struggles to read coverages, and he's not a guy who's going to sit in the pocket and throw into tight windows. He's going to more hold the ball for a while, scramble, and got sacked 6 times this game too. Let's remember that. So. Very fortunate there.
Yeah, I mean, the Michigan defense has been awesome all year. The front seven's been excellent, so there was no reason to expect anything less. Okay, so you get the stop, and then the punt. With like 45 seconds left, guy feels the punt inside the 5. Or no, it was inside the 10, and he muffs the punt. And it looks like it may be a safety to end the game. Take me through that sequence.
I mean, the first thought is just like, this mother effing punter. I mean, this guy has been outstanding all day. He is just slaughtering these punts. When Jake Thaw, we didn't have Samaj back there. We had Jake Thaw back there because this guy is just supposed to be very conservative. Either let it go or catch it 100 times. We don't care about him, his returns. Just be conservative. I thought he obviously should have let it bounce, but
how do you not let that bounce? It's going to go into the end zone.
He attempts to field it, and just like Samaj Morgan did earlier, he buffs it. It's almost unbelievable that can happen 2 times to a team that has been so disciplined in their special teams fundamentals for the past, I mean, decade. Not even forgetting, like, even when we were like not that great and losing to Ohio State. Special teams was the one thing we always had. We have multiple kickers in the NFL, punters, return guys. Like, this is a special teams unit that's been outstanding. So for it to let us down in this game is just it's mind-boggling to me. The forward progress spotted the ball outside the goal line. So a really bad situation was dodged again. So
that would have been a next level way to lose a game. Like, that's something you don't come back from. Like, that's like scarred forever. So you're in the title game now. Washington took care of Texas, which was also an entertaining game. How confident are you in the matchup next week against Washington? Because Penix looked awesome. Their offense is very explosive.
Yeah.
What's your confidence meter?
Yeah, I mean, Washington's been great. I've watched a lot of their games this year, and I've watched Michael Penix, and you know, there's definitely some buyer's remorse for a lot of people who voted Jaden Daniels the Heisman Trophy winner now, but you know, it's a regular season award, I guess. So, but at the same time, I'm just it. That's a totally different team. I mean, you talk about different strengths against strengths, right? We're a much slower, methodical, power running team. Where we rely upon JJ to put the ball in the right spot at the right times, where, I mean, they are a big time spread, crazy, wide out, almost air raid offense with NFL receivers. Michael Penix, who was supposedly injured for a little bit and now looks fully healthy. Roma Dunze, who made an insane catch.
He's a monster. Potential future New York Giant. Potential future New York Giant wide receiver.
Yeah.
He's a beast.
They're a different animal entirely from Alabama. Defense is a little more vulnerable than Alabama, in my opinion. And you kind of saw Quinn Ewers actively move the ball down the field pretty easily. I thought they had a couple of disruptive pass rushers on Washington that I hadn't seen all year. And then, you know, their offensive line is really good too. And we did see their running back, Dylan Johnson, get injured toward the end of the game. So I don't know if he'll be available for the national championship. But yeah, it's totally two different styles of teams going up against each other. You know, I think we came out as a 4.5 point favorite when the market's open today. I don't know. It's going to be an awesome game. The main thing is, how many times have I seen this Michigan defense play anyone even in the stratosphere of Michael Penix and his receivers in the Big Ten? Not at all. We receivers wise, yeah, we played against Marvin Harrison and Emeka Egbuka, but we haven't. Kyle McCord's not Michael Penix, so right. I don't know what it's going to be like. I mean, we also don't have a player that can really simulate Michael Penix in practices this week, so we'll see. But it definitely should be an interesting game and a lot of excitement.
And the secondary is going to be tested.
Absolutely.
It's not necessarily the strength of Michigan defense either, but yeah. You know, the beauty of like secondary plays, and you see this in the NFL all the time, is just like if you get home with your front four, you know, you can mask certain things in the secondary.
Absolutely. I don't think Texas is very different than Michigan. Is that Texas, you know, the only strength of their front seven is really the interior, where they didn't really generate a lot of pass rush, where Michigan can get home from the edge. I thought Texas' secondary played actually really well yesterday. I just thought that their receivers caught ridiculously contested balls that Penix put, damn, right on the money. So, you know, it's going to be a tough test, and we'll definitely need to pressure him quite a bit to make him make some mistakes.
So regardless of result next week, your coach has had an interesting year. He's had some run-ins with the NCAA. He's always been flirting with the NFL. Where are you at with the coach right now, and how confident in terms of he's leaving regardless of situation?
I mean, you know, this is like the last thing on my mind right now, but no, I totally get where you're coming from. I mean, it's a little odd that he hasn't signed his contract extension yet. I mean, there's always going to be I have said this before to you. I always think he wants to win a Super Bowl. I mean, I think that's one of his desires. At the same time, I think he loved being at Michigan. He's family loves Michigan. I think he probably wants to feel the love from Michigan, and that's not necessarily, you know, annual income or anything like that. But like I've said before, I think it's more just like he wants Michigan to have their back should the NCAA come after him for something stupid again. So he wants certain clauses in his contract that like they can't just fire him and take away his buyout. So like things like that, like a four cause clause. I think he wants more NIL commitment. I think he wants more comp for his assistant pool. Things like that, I think is probably what's holding up the contract extension. Do I think he's also a California guy? So like that Chargers job opens after the season. Do I think where they're going to pursue Harbaugh? I think that is something that he'll be interested in. But you know, if we win a national championship, I don't really care. I said that before. But you know, if we don't win a national championship, we clearly looks like we have a coach in waiting in Sharon Moore. I mean, he coached six of the games this year. So I love Harbaugh. I mean, I'm the biggest Harbaugh defender out there, so it is what it is.
If they don't win, I think he'll be back. Because I think he'll feel like it's unfinished business. It's his alma mater. Like, he has a special kinship there. If they win, I think it's right off into the NFL. Yeah. And
it depends on the other end, what's available, right? There's not, you know, he's not just going to leave for leaving's sake. So,
right. I mean, he's good. I mean, the right offer will have to be there. But for some reason, I think the right offer will always be there. It's just a matter if he wants to you know, depending on what happens Monday, you know, if he wants to stick it out where he's like a made man and the contract can get ironed out. All right. So what's your confidence meter? Scale of 1 to 10 going into to Monday.
Let's see. So the money line is -180. So that's 60%. So let's go. Vegas is giving us a 60%, 65%. So confidence 1 to 10, I'm 6.25.
6.25. Is there any fear that, you know, Washington's been disrespected now for a while, right? They were underdogs against Oregon, beat Oregon. They were underdogs against Texas, they beat Texas. They're opening up at 4.5-point underdogs against Michigan. Is this like, you know, the ultimate disrespect story? Were they, you know, does that make you nervous? I mean, obviously you're nervous. You're on the precipice of winning a title, but it's just like, you know, it's got to make you like a little bit more nervous than normal because, you know, this team has passed every test.
Totally. I mean, yeah, Vegas is saying on underdog, absolutely. To me, I don't think anyone thinks that J.J. McCarthy's the better quarterback than Michael Penix. And so I can think...
Well, NFL draft picks kind of do, I think.
They do, but I think people, like, looking at this game and analyzing this game are just, like, so enamored with Michael Penix. I think J.J. himself is very composed and is not looking at this like, we're going to definitely trounce them on the better... Like, I think he's seen... that everyone's talking about Michael Penix, not J.J. McCarthy. So, like, yes, do I think we're in the favorite position? Sure. We're not going up against Alabama and Nick Saban, who's done this time and time again. We're going up against Kalen DeBoer. So, in Washington, I think the stadium is going to be very heavy Michigan. If it was Texas in Texas, I think that'd be problematic. But it's probably not. So, I think Michigan fans are going to buy up a lot of these tickets. So that's good in our favor. But, yeah, I mean, I bet you if we were picking these games, 9 out of 10 talking heads are going to pick Michigan too. So, like, it's – I don't know. We'll see.
What's the one thing that needs to go right for Michigan to win? If you have to narrow it down to one. Like, what's the one thing that you say, if this happens, Michigan's going to win?
Yeah. I mean, on both sides, I think J.J. McCarthy, like, really has to be stellar. I mean, he really has to. He was fine yesterday, 220 yards, 3 touchdowns, no picks. But he definitely was behind.
But there were shaky moments. You know, the numbers looked all right, but there were some shaky moments.
Absolutely. Washington's way too explosive of an offensive team to just grind out our – Corum and Edwards and Mullings on the ground. I think we're going to have some big plays. I think Sherrone Moore, the offensive coordinator, is going to have to be in his bag again. I do think JJ is going to have to be sharp throughout the game. That's on offense. And then on defense, it's can we pressure Penix? He's probably not going to make that many mistakes, but can we pressure Penix into difficult positions and maybe force them to move the ball on the ground versus in the air, because, you know, if those receivers get going, I think you're really asking for it against the Huskies.
All right, we'll let you go on this one. What's the setup next week?
Setup is I'm flying out on Sunday afternoon.
All right.
We have dinner reservation Sunday night in Houston, and then I'm working at locking down a private space maybe for the fellas and myself. To go to a bar around noon, you know, get a little tailgate in, head over to the stadium. And right now the ticket market is not favorable. monitoring that right now, but I think that'll have its ebbs and flows too.
But regardless, you're going to be in Houston.
I will be in Houston. And then, yeah, hopefully a really rocky travel day on Tuesday morning, but a celebratory one nonetheless.
Flight back is booked too for Tuesday morning.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm not staying there forever. Yeah. No. 6 a.m. So, yeah.
6 a.m. Tuesday. That could potentially be a very rough flight.
It is an earlier game this year. Usually this game, like, kicks off at like 9 p.m. It's actually 7 p.m., which is 6 p.m. in Houston. So
right.
Nobody's trying to stay. Like, the Washington game was inexcusably late last night. So this game will be a nice and earlier Monday night game.
All right. Well, I wish you luck. Safe travels. I hope it pays off. I'm pulling for you. And obviously, I appreciate you coming on. Quick notice. Obviously, you needed to get a little celebration. You're in uncharted waters. You finally got to the mountaintop, and now it's just about taking care of business now that you're there. Congrats. I'm pulling for you, and thanks for hopping on quickly, and we'll speak.
All right. Sounds good. Thanks, Aaron. Take care.
So I have the pleasure of welcoming on a recurring guest. He's having himself quite a stretch with his sports teams because he's a Knicks fan. He's a Ravens fan. I'll even let him gloat about that at the end of it. It's none other than Eric Fleming. E, what's going on, bud? How you doing?
I'm good, man. Good. Glad to be back again, man. Good times.
So, wanted to obviously talk about the OG Anunoby trade. RJ Barrett, IQ out the door. OG Anunoby in. We have two games of evidence. The New York Knicks, I think they look way more watchable than they did before. There's still some problems that need to be solved. But before I get into all that, when did you kind of realize that something needed to be done, that a trade was maybe brewing? Because, you know, there's a little detail that the Raptors and the Knicks are in a legal battle right now over stolen plays. And generally, trades like this don't happen until later on in the season. Like, when did it become a little clear to you that something was up?
I mean, well, the play, I think, of RJ Barrett, I think, was triggering to them. And the team looked stale. You know, just overall, it was up, down. They started to become or look very much like one of those teams that just can't beat any good teams ever. You know, unless it's some really fluky stuff, the rotation was clunky. So I don't know if I got an indication that something was going to happen, but I mean, in my personal opinion, I felt like something needed to happen.
Yeah.
Funny enough, I mean, I don't know if you remember the last time you had me on and you asked, like, what would be a move I would make? And I think this was before the season started. I literally said OG. That was the guy I picked. Someone else, I don't remember who was the other guy, I said, but OG was the guy. I was like, they need a legit small forward. In my mind, it would be to move RJ to the two, and that would make things easier. I didn't expect that it would be RJ Barrett headed out the door, but I knew IQ wasn't going to be there. I kind of felt like that was he was absolutely going to get moved the minute that deadline passed. I think shortly after the season started for those guys to get
for
extended.
The extension, yeah,
right. Once that didn't happen, I'm like, there's no way. I don't, unless he came in and was just absolutely took it to another level from last season, I'm like, he's getting traded. Otherwise, this would be epic malpractice here by the management with this guy because he's obviously worth something. So, I mean,
I mean, they could have taken it to restricted free agency, but, you know, I think he would have been restricted. I think so. But it's funny you say IQ, yeah. Right? Because the minute I knew something was up was obviously he didn't come to the extension in the offseason. But it was that game in Oklahoma City, right? Where it's a close game in the fourth quarter. The Knicks were down 7. IQ hits a 3 with about 4.5 minutes left. And then he gets pulled right afterwards. And this is... You know, knowing that he's been the spark plug that kind of helped them get back in this game. We know that the numbers suggest that when he and Brunson played, they played really well together. And he got yanked in that game. And I was like, all right, something is weird here. Right?
Yeah.
And then for RJ Barrett, who couldn't hit the side of a barn, I was like, okay, this is the Knicks doing their thing where they need to feed Barrett's ego because he was drafted 3rd overall in the draft and he's going to get the minutes and the usage and the touches.
Right.
And they're trying to suppress IQ's value because of the contract situation. I'm like, all right, something is up, right?
Yep.
And then Barrett just couldn't make a shot and it was just like they need to do something.
Yeah.
And, you know, OG Anunoby, I don't love the fact that people talk about him like in sports media that he's like the second coming of LeBron James. Like, he's in year seven. He averages 17 points a game, 5 rebounds, 4 assists. You know, he wants.
He's a guy.
He's a good player, but he's not the second coming of LeBron the way people talk about him, right?
Or even like Kawhi. I've heard a lot of comparisons to that. He's not like Kawhi Leonard. He's just lockdown Kawhi, like Kawhi. And I'm like, he's not that. He's a good player that would fit on a good team that can be very valuable. Kind of like Mikal Bridges on that Suns team a couple of years ago. You stick him in between a Chris Paul and a Devin Booker, he looks amazing. His value is through the roof. That's how you end up trading a guy like him and get Kevin Durant back in return. You know, but
I think the Suns lost the KD trade, but that's another subject for another
time. Yeah, they did. They desperately need to do something else there as well. But then you see what happens as he goes to Brooklyn and he's getting all the points, he's scoring more, but it doesn't affect winning. So it's, to me, he's in the same boat, like that kind of guy. But it's a good fit. It gives their roster more definition, more, you know, everyone has a more assigned job. It's not as clunky as it was before. I think it was very repetitive with the between RJ and Quickly and the two other boys. I call them all the Villanova boys. You know what I'm saying?
DiVincenzo. Those guys are different, but RJ and Randall really overlapped in terms of how they like to play, the spots that they like to occupy on the floor. And RJ wasn't as good as Randall at doing any of those things.
Right. They never fit. And if you wanted RJ to shine like that, hold on a sec. If you wanted RJ to shine like that, he needed to have basically the team to himself.
Which I'm not necessarily is ever going to result in big time winning.
That ship has sailed. We'll never know. You know what I mean? But that's what happens. If you draft a guy third, you're just going to throw him out there and have him play and have him figure his thing out. And you'll figure out if he's a good player or not, you know, but they brought him in, they had him playing behind a guy. He was never better than, you know, and their games didn't complement each other ever. Right. So it was discombobulated from the jump. I think this makes the team a little more clear. They still need to make that move, though.
Hold that thought for a second, because I do want to get there. But I want to talk about the basketball fit beforehand. And I agree with you. The Barrett thing was frustrating, especially because you'd get these, you know, tweets from your friends or whatever, like messages, like WhatsApp groups, or talking about how RJ Barrett has reached all these statistical thresholds by the time he's of a certain age, and he's in a group with like Luka and LeBron. And we're just like, what are you watching? I was like, first of all, it's easier to get points than ever before, right? Like, you know, statistics are a little hollow now, right?
It's
now
all it's inflated. Kind of it's jumped inflated. The shark,
and it's just like, just first and secondly, like, and Ryan Russillo has done an awesome job at this, where he's just like, Barrett doesn't play in the fourth quarters. The coach doesn't trust him. And he kind of even has to force play him because the front office wanted to justify the draft pick, right?
Exactly.
So he was getting all these possessions and all these minutes when, you know, there were no indications saying that he was a net positive. Like, Quickly, there were indications that he was a net positive. And World Wide West being there, Quickly's a Kentucky guy. You would think, considering the Knicks are run like the mafia, that he would be a made man because of those connections.
Right.
But once they brought in Jalen Brunson had more gravitas, right? And Jalen Brunson's a better player. But like, once they brought him in, Quickly was never going to be realized to his full potential. That's just what it was.
Yeah.
And RJ was still getting the star J Barrett treatment. And it was just like, I think even Tibbs got to a point, was like, we can't do this anymore. And
definitely.
With OG, it's like one less, you know, black hole a little bit, because like OG cuts to the basket. He does other things. He's an elite defensive player. And when he's left open for corner threes, I have faith that they're going to go in when I never thought Barrett was going to make them. The only thing is that, you know, OG Anunoby is a free agent at the end of the year. Now, do I think that they got a wink-wink deal done? Yes.
Yeah.
Is the level of contract for a guy who's somewhere between good and very good going to annoy me, especially this offseason when the free agent market's not that great and they're going to overpay? Yeah, it is going to annoy me. But in terms of this year, it's a really nice fit. They've been way more watchable right now. There's more ball movement. There's more player movement. And I don't even think that's a Tibbs thing because Tibbs doesn't change. It's just him
the players doing and the talent on the floor.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a talent. You touched on something there, though. The contract situation. I mean, Leon Rose's son is his agent. So literally, you have to believe there's a wink, wink in there. They talked about this over dinner one night. You know what I'm saying? So, but that's also why even with that being said, that's why I think the trade deadline this year I think is uber important for them to make the next move. Because to me, if you get in, like what you just said, if they do nothing else, right? And this is what the team looks like for the most part. Till the end of the season, when he gets into free agency, he's going to ask for a ton of money. It's going to especially if they look better from here on out, he's going to say, I added to your team, whether it is his son is his agent or not, they're going to have to fork over a ton of money. And to me, the only way they'll get around that is by bringing in another player an actual star again, like a Donovan Mitchell. There's still talk about that. If that happens somehow, then you now could at least sell him on the idea of you're on an amazing team here, you know, take a lesser deal, whatever, we could make that make sense, and we got our squad for a couple of years. If they don't do that, then he's going to be making like 30 some million dollars a year, OG. You know what I'm saying? Like, he's going to be the third highest. Well, he'll end up being the highest paid player on the team because he's going to get more than what Jalen and Julia signed for a couple of years ago.
Well, the Brunson contract, now looks like an absolute steal.
Oh, it's
like a godsend that it can help them do other things. But, you know, the OG thing is interesting because, like, he obviously wanted out of Toronto. That thing had ran its course. But he wanted to, like, kind of spread his wings as a player in a sense where he's, like, wants more touches, wants more on-ball, you know, situations. But, like, he's not getting that
anymore. He's not going to get that
here. Because, because Randall's going to, you know, and I don't mean to dump on Randall because he's been awesome the last 15 games. And I'm, like, one of his biggest critics, but he's been excellent.
This is his time of year, man. Well, nobody plays better than Randall.
Unfortunately, it doesn't translate to later in the year. But, like, he's not getting the on-ball creation opportunities, right?
No.
So it's just a weird thing. And it's like the Knicks do this thing where either they're going to sell you that this is the move and it's going to be like, oh, now we're like on the upper echelon in the East, or they're going to sell you on the other thing. Like, we're setting up for the next move. But unfortunately, either by their doing or just the league shifting around them, the next move never comes. And that's why the Knicks fans are just like, yeah, are they better? Yes. Does it make them that much better where it's going to take them to the Eastern Conference Finals? No.
It doesn't move the needle at all. Like, and that's why I keep falling back to that. You know, as usual, I get killed for this on Twitter because I'm called a negative fan for this stuff. But that's what I said about the trade. I like good trade, perfect fit, nice trade. It makes sense for all the reasons. They still need to make another move. And the reply I get back is, why can't you just be happy? Because we have what
tortured.
Are we?
We're tortured. That's what it is.
All you want is a chance, and we don't. No matter how good you think we are, right? We are not a contender. We have zero chance of winning the East. We're not.
But you have to put yourself in that
position. That's it. Like, there's no guarantees in sports, and none.
Right.
But you know who has a chance and who doesn't.
Right.
And we have that.
But even beyond that, if the messaging of the front office was that, like, you know, it's not all going to come at once. And again, Leon Rose doesn't talk to the media, so it's through
his, have no idea what the message is.
His handlers or the media guys like Ian Begley basically translating it for us. And, you know, yeah. and Woj, who's basically paid off by, you know, the Knicks, mm-hmm. Knicks for clicks kind of stuff when they put him on TV. Just like that the next move is coming. It's like, just maybe not say anything and just like build the team. But don't tell us that it's coming and it doesn't come. Now, again, they didn't expect the Sixers to be this good and Joel Embiid to be happy. That's not their fault, right?
Let me say something to that real quick on that point, because that was a talk all summer, you know, and one of my close friends is from Philly, hardcore Philly fan, and he called it. He's like, I have no idea what this talk is out of New York about Embiid. Embiid is not going anywhere. And he's like, Maxey's going to be incredibly good. Now that Harden's gone. He straight up and down called it. Yeah. He's like, y'all don't pay attention to any other team but the Knicks. He's like, this is not going to happen. Everything that's going on with Philly right now, he said it in June. You know, he's like,
and it wasn't going to happen unless the Knicks bowled them over with an offer and went full boat, and they didn't even do that.
Right, like, which wouldn't have helped the Knicks anyway. Why would you give up half the farm to get Embiid over there, like, and then you don't have a team? So it never made sense. They still have the only thing that bothered me about the OG trade is because I don't love the fact that RJ was in the trade, because I feel like we now have less assets that we need to get that big star. I would have liked him to be in the move for the star. I feel like we could have gotten OG with Fournier, IQ, and like two picks. I felt like should have been able to get it.
See, I'll disagree in this sense. I think Barrett's stock was declining. I couldn't stand watching him play. And couldn't stand watching him play, like, you know, I notice these things. I'm a pretty astute basketball mind, but I'm a fan. Like, I can't imagine what the, what front offices are looking at. Like, I just thought they were selling more on RJ Barrett, but quickly, because they paid Barrett that ridiculous extension that they did not need to do.
They didn't have to,
Losing IQ was kind of like the tax in that to get a really good player back in OG Anunoby.
That argument for sure. I just feel like with other teams, some other teams, they just look at it as he's 23 and playing behind two other guys. And we're going to put him out front. So what his value is for another team just simply might be different. So I don't know. I mean, obviously, we're not in the front office. We're not talking to any of these people. But I would have preferred a route where we still had him and the draft picks and crap to then use him and that to go get the star. Because I feel like now it's way harder to go get a real star with what's left.
Not so that. I think they have enough draft picks.
Who's the biggest value though?
It's the Fournier contract, and again, like, you know, as Fat Joe says, yesterday's price is not today's price. So I think that like the price of a Donovan Mitchell, the price of some of these guys, and
like, we're you not don't even think sure that's going
to come available yet. It's not what it was.
Yeah.
A year and a half ago, like that summer. Sure. So it'll be interesting to see. I want to ask you a question, because obviously one of the first two games, and you know, there's a lot of positivity in Knickland, you know, two wins, a really nice win against Minnesota. Yeah, nice win. The best team in the league at that point. But you can tell that the second unit is lacking.
It's lacking
in scoring and shot creation and just a lot of pop. And IQ had that, right? Do you think with the current roster, now again, there's going to be an adjustment period, right? Like, guys are going to start feeling themselves out a little bit. But do you think in the current roster, or I should say with the current roster, they can recreate IQ's offense in the aggregate? Or are they going to have to go out and get another, you know, guard who's kind of like a microwave type?
What I would like to see, I guess there's two ways to look at it. One, I think it's a lot easier to replace IQ's production than most Knicks fans would think. believe. I think almost every team in the league has a guy kind of like that on their bench. It's just depending on how that team uses him, how much time they give him.
They don't have him right now, but I think they can give other guys opportunities.
But that's where I was going next. So I think if they had to go step on and get one, I think that's not that tall of a task. But I would really like to see them really put some behind Grimes, because I feel like Grimes has the potential, and to an extent, Deuce McBride as well. Give them the run. Get them out there. Let them go out there and hoop. I really believe Grimes can absolutely give the same production that IQ did off the bench. It's just weird how they use him the way Tibbs, man. It's just I can't help but feel that if there's 20 other coaches in the league that would have Grimes looking like damn near 20 points per game. Coming off the bench, a sixth man of the year candidate. Again, you can't tell me that kid can't be that. He's shown every sign in the book that he can.
Have you noticed that when they've actually passed him the ball the last couple of games, he's produced? It's like amazing when he touches the ball. But also at the same time, like JJ Redick talked about it on his show, where guys are programmed to do different things now, that they're programmed to be specialists. Yeah. Like, you notice, and I was talking about with friends who are always bagging on Grimes. I'm like, just watch the possessions. He grabs a rebound, clap, you know, he's not going to push himself, grabs a rebound, throws it to the guard, runs straight to the left corner, right? Mm-hmm. Watch how many possessions go by before he touches the ball via a pass. And I'm just like, you realize, like, it's hard to play basketball that way.
That's why I said he never I spoke on that he should have never been in a starting lineup, because that would never work between Brunson and Randle. He's not going to ever touch the ball, ever. So I was like, you brought in DiVincenzo. I don't know why they didn't start him from the jump, but they eventually got there anyway, right? And have him come off the bench as the main guy, and that's what they should be doing now. He should be the first guy off the bench. And again, when one of the two, Brunson or Randle, are not on the floor, and just let him cook, you know. But to answer your question, I think they can
run him in a dribble handoff. Use him like JJ Redick. Like, he's able to attack a closeout. Like, he's got some passing ability, but, like, enable him to handle the ball.
Exactly. He has the ability to do this, man, but they have to utilize him right. They have to maximize his strengths. That's up to the coaches. That's where they come in, you know. I think they have it right. And I don't think that they're lacking the talent to replace IQ's production. I don't think that's the case. I think they have it in a Grimes, but they got to figure out how to use that, how to use them right.
I agree. They just have to enable them. To enable them. Randle, what are your thoughts on Randle? I mean, obviously he's been fantastic. His minutes last night against the Bulls, and again, we're recording on a Thursday, so his minutes last night against the Bulls in the second quarter with the bench unit were gross. But other than that, he played a really good game. He's had a really nice stretch here. Obviously, he has – you know, disappointed down the stretch. Where are you at with Randle right now?
Nowhere. Wash, rinse, repeat. I am on a complete wait and see with Randle. I have no praise for him. I'm not going to bag on him. He's playing well. When you're playing well, you're playing well, period. There's no way around that. But I need to see this in April, May, and June. That's when I need to see it. His history, he does not have the benefit of the doubt at all. He needs to show it. He hasn't earned that one bit. He needs to show it. He needs to play at this level when the playoffs start, from day game one until whenever they get eliminated. Until then, I'm just kind of shrugging my shoulder at it. Oh, he had 37 and 12. Cool. It's January. I don't care. That's just where I'm at.
I'm in 100% agreement.
And that sounds like hate. It's not hate. It's just, how can I get excited about that? And then when the two times he's been in the postseason, he's done nothing for the team. Absolutely nothing. RJ Barrett was the second best player in the playoffs last year for us. That's bad. Yeah. That's not good. You know what I'm saying? So he has to prove it. I hope he keeps it up. I hope he keeps getting even better than what he is right now. And I hope he takes it into the postseason, man.
With that said, because I agree with you, one of the things that kind of annoyed me about this trade is just like when I joke about it, I feel like I'm repeating myself, that the Knicks are run like the mafia.
Yeah.
That like Randall's just the made man and this is what it is. Right. Yeah, and even though I believe that he's good enough to get you to the second round and then no further, yeah, that the Knicks with this deal are kind of leaning into him being a cornerstone piece for a while. And that's fundamentally been annoys me.
That's been evident to me for like the last time we talked, I said this, from the minute they gave him that extension, when they did it, 5 minutes after he wet the bed against the Hawks, I'm like, okay, he's there forever. Because there was no incentive to do it when they did that year. They didn't have to do it then. Just like the RJ situation, they didn't have to give him that extension right then. They could have at least waited till halfway to the season and say, okay, prove it that this wasn't a fluke, that this first great season you had in, at that point, 7 years in the league, all right, it wasn't a fluke, you know? And then if he started the season hot, which he didn't that year, right? But if he had, yeah, in December, February, January, whatever, you then give him the same extension anyway. So he would have been fine. But the fact that they did that, like, that was predetermined. They was giving him that money. The whole, like you said, it's all because they actually family.
Right, but it's funny because if you look back in terms of just, like, market rate, like, they kind of got it at a little bit of a discount, which is kind of crazy, even though we didn't think about that in the moment.
I mean, if you're him too, you're gonna take whatever long term deal they gave you. You got to remember, prior to that, he was allowed to walk from two previous teams.
Yeah,
you know, he was damn near a journeyman. He was entering that realm of his career, and now he played well in 1 year, and the team is like, hey, here's 4 years. He hadn't gotten a contract. He literally, that was the first long term contract he got since his rookie contract. You know, so he wasn't going to go anywhere. And yeah, the deal does, it is a good deal today, but they didn't have to give it to him then. You know, shit, they might have even gotten an even better deal had they waited a little bit, because he didn't play well the following season. So
yeah, he or they just could have gotten out of it, which is ultimately, exactly. I think this team's ability to take a step forward is he's just going to have to go on.
I love that term. He's a made man there as long as Leon is there. I don't think there's anything he can do that is going to get him moved or anything. They're totally treating him like he's a franchise player. And
Then guess what? Wait for him to start making like $50 million a year, and that will legitimately drive me off the world.
That's what's going to sink this franchise for good. In the next 2 years, when they're up for extension, both him and Jalen, and they ask for that $40-some million a year, both of them. And they're
I don't even want to think about it right now because that's ultra depressing.
We'll
let you go on this. As I mentioned, you're a Ravens fan, and I think we can close the book on the Knicks for a second, because I think we'll be in the 4-5-6 range, you know, depending on the matchup. They can win a first round series. You know, I'd love for them to bring in another guy. I'm not sure who it is. Like, I know Donovan Mitchell may be out there.
I have a feeling by the deadline. I think they're going to do something.
By the deadline? I think it's going to be an offseason thing.
That's when it's going to get super dicey. My God. That scares me to death. Because of the OG free agency.
Because you think
there's
going to be more of a bidding war in the offseason?
Yes. I think there's going to be less options. I don't know why there's just this. I hate this assumption that there's just going to be this wealth of guys that's just really big names are just all going to want out of their teams and also going to want to go to the Knicks. They're like, what are we, based off what? That's what I don't like relying on that. And like we talked about earlier, OG's pending free agency. I don't know. I don't love that idea. I would like for them to be aggressive right now. Get the guy. Try to. I don't know if they can, obviously, but try to get the guy now and see what it is and go from there, man.
At least make the effort. So I think we're in agreement. We're in agreement on the Knicks. Your Baltimore Ravens, a team that I've been harsh on. How are you feeling about the Ravens going into last week of the season? They clinched the one seed. And are you ready for the crap storm that if they lose, in round two after the bye week, and Lamar says goes for 220 yards, a touchdown, an interception, a fumble loss. Are you ready for it? Are you ready for the James Harden, Lamar Jackson
comparisons? Man, it's I ain't gonna lie, it will be brutal. Brutal.
And you know who's gonna be leading the charge in your mentions?
Oh, you. Yeah, exactly. Right. I'm like, I've talked so much, man, Matt. You know, I'm like, it's gonna be so brutal, man. But if I gotta eat crow, I gotta eat crow. It's all good, man. But I don't see it, man. I think we're gonna run through the playoffs. I honestly do. I think the first real challenge they're gonna get is gonna be in the Super Bowl from whoever comes out. I do. I really.
And there's no team in the AFC that scares you a little bit.
None. Not one. The team, you know who did, and this was before the season started, the team that I talked about that I felt like people were underselling, and I was, to me, 100% right, the Browns. When I looked at the Browns before the season started, I was like, that team is built exactly like the Ravens, and they can give us a real problem. And they did. They are one of the three teams that beat the Ravens. But now, obviously, with Deshaun Watson out, and they've had some brutal injuries. So Flacco is their guy.
Just I love as Flacco. Good as Watson's have been there, and if not better.
I love Joe, but he's throwing at least three picks to us if we see him. So we're fine. I ain't scared of Joe. Not now. Not in 2024. In the AFC, there's no one there that's scary. I had a little question mark about Miami until last week Sunday.
Well, yeah, I mean,
so
and Miami like, got hit really hard with the injury bug. Like they did. Got, you know,
but just both. Offensively, I said, you know, that's a scary team offensively, man. You know, that's how I felt at least on Saturday night. But by Sunday night, I was like, yeah, they'll get it too. So I'm not worried, man. I think it's going to be an NFC team that is going to give us a shake. I think even though what we did to the 49ers looked dominating, I think if we see them again, it'd be a much closer game. My dark horse in NFC is actually the Rams. I think the Rams might get out and actually make
it. I was going to say, don't say the Dallas Cowboys. Don't.
No. I have zero faith in them. Yeah, I think the Rams actually, that would not surprise me one bit if the Rams make it to the bowl. And them, obviously, because we had a crazy game against them. That's the only quarterback I saw actually torch the defense. But
right now, it's hard because you know, obviously the Ravens are peaking right now, and it's a good time to be peaking. But as we've seen, you know, in the NFL this year, like once you start to like crown a team, all of a sudden, like they kind of just like the hammer gets hit on them a little bit.
And
Lamar's resting, and all these guys are going to be resting, so you're not going to get that in week 18. I don't know. Well, Lamar's playoff history is sketchy. It's very sketchy. You gotta prove that you can do it. Now again, sports, as we talk about the mafia all the time, like sports, like if once you do it, like you're a made man, like that's it. No one can say anything, right? So you just gotta do it. I mean, I also think that there's basically like right now two good teams and everybody else is kind of mediocre.
That's why I said what I said about the AFC. I just don't see a team that's scary like that. It's the 49ers are for real. And then, like I said, I got
if they lose to the Chiefs horse, in round two, how much would that hurt?
Oh, it would hurt. If they lose to anyone, it would hurt at any point in the playoffs. They need to get to the Super Bowl. There's no reason for them not to. There's none. That's how I am with it. Look, we didn't, obviously, if you knew me in 2019, I was one of the few fans that was like, I don't have any faith in that team. It didn't shock me that the Titans went in there and beat them at all. Right. I was like, what they're doing is kind of gimmicky on offense. Yeah, I know they're 14-2, but it's kind of gimmicky what they're doing with Lamar, where it's run, pass it to Mark Andrews, run. And the defense was okay, but not great. All right, so when they lost to the Titans, I was kind of like, yeah, like I'm not surprised. Like, this is kind of gimmicky what they did all season. It worked. It was lightning in the bottle. No one ever saw Lamar before. Sure, like I get it. That's not the case with this team. This team has zero excuses. They have a real offense there now that's diverse, that does things.
And Lamar's gotten better.
He's gotten better. The defense is insane. This is a legit defense that I think will clamp anyone. They have no excuse. There is nothing. There's no team that's going to make the playoffs in the AFC that should be able to beat them.
So your Super Bowl prediction is a rematch of what, week 16, Niners, Ravens?
Yes. I want to say the Rams, man. I really was impressed with the Rams, and I like what they're doing. I think nobody's talked about them. I think they might be one of those teams that sneak in, come in hot in the playoffs, and then just run through everyone. I think the Rams, yo. I think the Rams. I'm going to pick the Rams. I think it's going to be the Rams and the Ravens. Not Rams, a popular Ravens. Pick. Rams, right, Ravens.
Interesting. You know what? But sometimes you got to go out on a limb. I respect that.
I'm going to go out on a limb. I know everyone thinks it's the 49ers, but I'm going to go Rams. I think Rams, Ravens, man.
Aaron, this was great, bud. Thanks for coming on. I know scheduling was a little tough, but we got it done. Yeah, so. Always appreciate your insight. If Lamar craps the bed in round two against Patrick Mahomes, I will be.
I'll be hearing from you.
All up in your grill mix, letting you know about it. But I appreciate you, brother. I'll speak to you soon.
Hey, no problem, man. Appreciate it, man. Have a good one.
Thanks again to my recurring guest, Jordan Marks, for celebrating Michigan's win, going to the BCS title game. And for Eric Fleming coming on, talking about the Knicks and letting him gloat about his Ravens. Good stuff from them both. That's episode 237 for the love of the game. Take us out, Bun.
Partner till they let him off a lot. So gone, body rocks. Outside a lean back. Two step with your boy if you about your green bag. This is a Texas toast, so raise your glass. Because the whole dirty South is finna show they naked ass.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.